Come on to my house, to my house. I'm gonna give you candy. Come on to my house, to my house. I'm gonna give you an apple and a plum and an apricot or two. Hey.
Welcome to Food for Thought. Join us for a thought-provoking glimpse into the world of the food that we savor. Meet the women and men who are growing it, foraging for it, raising it, cooking it, and who share it with the rest of us. Today's guest is Allison Poklumba. Allison leads groups on tours to forage for common, useful, and delicious sea vegetables. We're going to talk a little bit about the sea vegetables that are out there and also foraging for them. Now, do you need a license to forage for sea vegetables?
Good question. No, you don't, as long as you are not on a boat or afloat. But if it's just you walking out, harvesting 10 pounds or less wet weight per day, you do not need a license.
Oh, per day. Okay. So you can gather up to 10 pounds. Well, it weighs quite a bit. So then you've got all this. What do you normally do with it after that point?
You know, it depends. Your seaweed is not going to keep very long. You need to keep it cold in the fridge, and it will last maybe about 3 days. And so whatever you can use fresh, great, go for it. From that point, you really need to dry your seaweed. And I would recommend drying it right away, with a couple of exceptions. We have a really delicious seaweed growing off our coast here called Cystocera is the genus. The common name is sea oak or chain bladder. And that is one that doesn't dry well, but pickles wonderfully. And not necessarily like how your grandma used to do it over the stove with the vinegar and the steam and all that, but more of marinating it.
Like a fresh pickle.
Like a fresh pickle.
Yeah.
Yes. But once you've dried your seaweed, which is what you're doing with the bulk of it, it stores up really well for, I mean, really, you could have it stored for 3 years in airtight containers in a dark cabinet and pull it back out and it would be as great as it was the day that you dried it.
Now, do you rinse it first in fresh water before you dry it?
You know, I don't. I really recommend rinsing your seaweeds in the ocean, which is part of the harvesting process. After you've gone out into the depths of the tide pools, you're wanting to come to a protected area where you can really shake out any of the little snails or sand particles, or you won't even believe the little crabs and things that are hiding in your seaweed, or maybe
there
you
are.
Know.
I've actually pulled the tray out of the dehydrator and gone, oh, shrimp. I don't think they were shrimp, but they do look like shrimp when they're dried,
yes.
Which is what happened to that poor little guy.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. But as far as rinsing in fresh water, as soon as the seaweed hits fresh water, it really starts to degrade. You're basically infusing it into that fresh water. And so salt water is the way to go.
Okay. I'll remember that from now on. Now, if you're going to go out there, it seems like for me, a really protected location, I think, is important for me. I want to see a lot of rocks and big things between me and the open ocean to know that, you know, I can see if a tide is coming or if there's a wave coming or something I should be concerned about. How do you choose the locations that you go collecting in?
Well, there are some legal considerations. You cannot harvest at any of the state or national park areas. If you look at land that's managed by BLM or county parks or local land trusts, those are good places to look for good rocky spots to harvest from.
Uh-huh.
And it's something where you just really have to go out adventuring and see what kind of places you can find. I don't want to give away all my secrets.
That's true. It's like getting people to reveal their berry picking
yes.
areas. It's not going to happen. Now, how about for dress and things to bring with you?
So one thing that's really helpful in terms of washing your seaweed after you've harvested it is bringing a colander or a salad spinner, which can really help to get out some of the little sand particles and things. Plastic bags to put your seaweed in. I really recommend bringing scissors into the tide pool to cut your seaweed when you're harvesting it. One ethical consideration is to make sure that you're harvesting the seaweed in such a way that it's going to continue to grow. And we talk about seaweeds as having parts to them, anatomical parts that are analogous to land plants, where it looks like they have roots and stems and blades. And what we would think of as the roots are the holdfast, and its job is to hold that seaweed onto the rock, and that's the base from where it grows. So if you remove that as you're pulling the seaweed from the rock, then you've just lost that plant. So you kind of want to think about going out and giving them little haircuts as you're going along, little trims so that they can keep growing where they are. And scissors are the perfect tool for that. And footwear is really important too. There's a lot of sharp barnacles and mussel shells and things. So don't wear your chacos or your flip-flops, but think more about like your bogs or your, you know, your rain boots or sneakers that you don't mind getting wet or surf booties.
Yeah. Great. Now, when you're out there, there's a lot of marine life out there. I think it's probably important to, you know, just kind of keep your distance from marine life if you can.
Definitely. Yeah. Especially if you see the seals and things, especially the little baby seals that are up on the beach. They're there for a reason.
Yeah. Now, how about pollution and runoff? What should you be concerned about with that?
Well, one of the things that seaweeds do, or all marine algae, is that they actually concentrate elements from the ocean into their bodies, which is one of the reasons why they're so good for us. The element iodine, for example, was discovered in kelps, and they have the ability to concentrate these things hundreds of thousands of times from what they naturally exist as in ocean water. And so they also have the ability to concentrate toxins. So it's really important that the place where you're harvesting doesn't have the culvert running, you know, into the ocean right there from some source of runoff. In general, I would say that our ocean waters here are incredible compared to many places on the planet. And that's part of the reason why I advocate for eating locally sourced sea vegetables as opposed to ones that are imported from other parts of the Pacific, especially after things like tsunamis that have washed out the contents of cities into the ocean.
And
Who knows?
We want to eat the highest quality food that we can.
Yes.
Now, what about recipes? Because I think one of the things that's important, you go out there, you collect all this great stuff. It almost feels like it's free. So you want to collect a lot of it. You take it home, you dry it, and then what?
Yes. Good question. Well, one thing I will say about that is time and time again, I see how people's eyes are bigger than their stomachs when it comes to harvesting seaweed. So when you go out, especially for the first couple times, you're really wanting to just take small amounts so that you can see how you're going to incorporate it into your life. And it's not like you're harvesting everything your family's going to eat for the next 5 years. That's really important. I also tell my students, it's great to look at sea vegetables as just another vegetable in your repertoire, and that you can think about when you're opening up your fridge or looking in the drawers of your cupboard, okay, am I going to use the potatoes, the carrots, the cauliflower, the kale? Oh, how about the wakame and the kombu and the nori and the sea lettuce and the sea cabbage and all these other ones too? They're just other great things to choose from that also happen to be very nutritious for you.
What is the way that you prepare them most often?
You've mentioned how much you love kombu, and kombu is, it's almost like a piece of leather. The stuff is thick. And so generally, the thicker your sea vegetable, the more you will have to simmer it in water. So once you've dried them, they rehydrate pretty quickly in water. You could simmer it for about 20 minutes in whatever you're making. You know, if it's a stir fry that you just keep adding little bits of water to, because it's just going to soak it up and expand as it's going. You don't want it to get too dry.
It expands in an amazing way.
Yes.
I have taken scissors and cut it into really tiny, tiny pieces. And then when I submerge it in liquid, it just blows up again.
And the classic recipe that's made with kombu is, well, two things really. There's dashi, which is a basic Japanese broth, where you are just taking your dried pieces of kombu, putting them in cold water, bringing it just to the point of boil and removing it, and you get this very delicate, lovely broth. And then also in beans. So putting pieces of dried kombu in with your black beans, your pinto beans, or whatever beans you're cooking, and letting them cook at a low simmer for 2.5 to 3 hours, I've noticed, is the point where the kombu totally disappears. It just disintegrates, it thickens the broth, it adds really amazing nutrients to what you're eating, and it also helps the beans to be more digestible. Sort of two classes of your sea vegetables, those more leathery, thick ones, and then the more delicate ones like nori and sea lettuce, which are a lot more thin, but they're also really chewy. And so what you have to do is tenderize them by quickly roasting them. Nori, this is the same sort of thing that our nori sheets are made out of. And you'll notice they often say roasted nori is what they're made out of, because then it is suddenly crunchy and delicious and not chewy at all.
If people are interested in learning more about foraging for seaweed, can they contact you somehow to get hooked up with one of your classes?
Yes, definitely. You can email me. It's creek, that's C-R-E-E-C, at humboldt.edu. You can check our blog, which is blog.backcountrypress.com. Or you can follow me on Instagram. It's earth2, as in the number 2, Allison, A-L-L-I-S-O-N.
Well, this is Jennifer Bell, and I've had the pleasure of talking with Allison Poklumba. Thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you.
Grapes and the cakes, hey, come on to my house, come on.
If you have any questions or comments about this program, please call the listener comment line at 826-6089. You can hear this broadcast again at the KHSU website under archived programs at khsu.org. This program is also available on iTunes. Food for Thought is produced in the KHSU studios located at Humboldt State University. Our engineer is Jessica Eden and producer is Jennifer Bell. Join us again next Friday on KHSU for another edition of Food for Thought during the KHSU homepage.